This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert, Jim Lang, the best-selling author of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Now on the air and online worldwide at retiresecure.com. Get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to the Lang Money Hour. We are talking smart money with CPA attorney and estate planning expert Jim Lang. He's also the author of two editions of Retire Secure and his newest book, The Roth Revolution. Today we're talking all about our beautiful city of Pittsburgh, with Controller Michael Lamb. Michael, are you with us?
I am. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, thanks.
Wonderful. Just as a reminder to our listeners, tonight's show is live. So if you have a question for Mr. Lamb or Mr. Lang, that's a bit of a tongue twister there. The number's 412-333-9385. Again, that's 412-333-9385. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. And before I kick off the questions, I have three quick little mini stories about Michael. First of all, years ago, when he was in the Prothonotary's office, I took a continuing education course for attorneys that he was teaching, and it was one of those things that, frankly, we had to be there, and probably I wasn't interested in the content at all because I was doing estate planning, and that was just, I was just there because I needed the credits. He did such a good job, though. I was really impressed. Later on, when he was running for mayor, and originally I was not supporting him, I ran into him and we started talking, and I thought, man, this guy is really smart. He understands what's going on. He is doing the right things for the city. This guy has my vote. And the last Michael Lamb story is my daughter, who is now 16 years old, was writing a paper for her class, and the paper was, how did the city mess up the snow removal last winter? And part of her assignment was to interview a city official. And I said, well, why don't you go talk to Michael Lamb? And she said, are you kidding? He's the controller. He would never talk to me. I said, well, you go ahead and try. Anyway, she did call Michael. Michael granted her a one-hour interview. She got an A on the paper. So, Michael,
nice.
Thank you very much.
Well, I don't know that I can take credit for the A, but I appreciate the acknowledgement.
Well, and one other thing, and I hate to say anything bad about my wife, but when I knew you were on the phone, I said, well, did Erica get out the thank you letter? My wife looked at me sheepishly and she said, Erica wrote it, but I didn't send it. So you might not have got it, but she did get it. No, we'll get it out to you, even if it's about a year late.
Oh, boy. Don't worry about it. But it's good to talk to you.
Well, good. Thank you for agreeing to be on the show.
Sure.
So one of the things that people want to know, and by the way, you were on, I guess, a year or two ago, and I thought you did a great job. You gave us a pretty thorough and, I thought, very poignant discussion of how our city is doing financially. So could you, this is a little bit of a broad-based question, but could you give us a financial report card on the city of Pittsburgh?
Well, you know, the last actual financial report that we've done would have been the year-end report for last year. And unfortunately, last year was not a good year for the city of Pittsburgh from a financial perspective. For the first time since I've been in office, and probably the first time in the last at least 7 or 8 years, the city of Pittsburgh finished the year in the red. We had a year where we brought in less money than we paid out. And that's been a rarity for Pittsburgh because we have, in each of the last several years, we've generated significant surpluses. And those surpluses have been what's enabled us to have some kind of capital program to do basic paving and those kind of things. But, last year we did not generate a surplus, and we're feeling the pinch of that this year as council and the mayor struggle with this issue of getting roads paved and the other capital needs that we have. We are in a much more difficult situation because of that, and that has a lot to do with a number of factors, including the recent downturn in the economy. And fortunately, in 2011, we're seeing a rebound from that. We had a much stronger first quarter in 2011 than we had in 2010, and we think that's going to continue. I mean, we're cautiously optimistic about having a surplus again this year, but 2010 was not a particularly strong year for Pittsburgh. Now, part of that has to do with some of the struggles and fights that the city's been having with respect to getting some things done. As you know, we're an Act 47 community, and we have an oversight board that sort of holds some of our purse strings. And last year, they decided not to release some funding to us that they finally have agreed to release this year. So there was about $10 million in gaming funding that we didn't get last year that we should have, and that would have gotten us a lot closer to a more balanced situation than we finished the year. So it's just from a pure financial record kind of standpoint, we didn't have a great 2010, so it was not a good year. That being said, we're doing some very good things in Pittsburgh right now. You know, we are adding jobs to the economy, and we're seeing that in the returns that we're seeing both in the local services tax, which is paid by everyone who works in the city, also in the earned income tax. We're seeing it, and then even our biggest tax, the property tax. A lot more people paid their property taxes on time this year than did last year. So we are seeing some recovery, and so we're, again, as I said, we're cautiously optimistic about 2011.
Well, Michael, that sounds to me like the equivalent of an income statement. And I guess one of the things that I think about as a CPA and an attorney is, well, what about the balance sheet? So I'm not exactly I'm nowhere near a government accounting expert, but does that take into account, or how do you take into account, say, the troubled pension fund?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a great question.
And these are the kind of things that scare me, because if we get by year to year,
right.
What's the big long-term
Right, when I'm talking to you, look at you, you're right. We're talking about a strict performance in a given year, okay? And our fiscal year is the calendar year. And in that fiscal year, you know, this is what we did or what we didn't do. But you're right. In addition to, you know, whether you make it year to year, you have these long-term legacy costs out there in Pittsburgh, and they are calculated into your budget because you have budgeted a certain amount that you're going to pay, for instance, to pensions or to long-term debt, you know, and just so you understand, City of Pittsburgh budget is just over $400 million. It's around $440 million, roughly. We spend every year, for the last few years, $85 million on long-term debt service. So just paying off our debt, we're paying $85 million, so about almost 20% of our budget goes right to that issue. Last year, we paid almost $60 million into the pension system. That's not counting what council did at the end of the year, moving some money around. Just our budgeted amount, we are budgeting between $50 and $60 million each year. So, you know, you add those numbers, you know, you're talking about a significant portion of your budget every year is already gone because of these long-term legacy costs, and so they're not available to do the day-to-day operation of the government. And so when, you know, you're exactly right that the numbers that I talked about earlier are just sort of your annuals, but you got to remember that the City of Pittsburgh has around $600 million in long-term debt that's still owing. And then on top of that, we've got a pension obligation that is it's a billion-dollar obligation of which we have around $300 million to pay. So we've got about a $700 million problem there. So those are the two big financial hurdles that the city has right now. And I tell you what, Jim, if those were the only problems we had, I think we'd be okay, because we know that over time we can pay our way out of those kind of problems. We know that there are the long-term debt problem. You know, when I took office, the long-term debt was almost $1 billion. Now it's down to close to $600 million. We've done a very good job of paying down that debt and not borrowing new money. And if we can continue to do that, we're going to really deal significantly with that problem. The pension problem is one of those things that, you know, we've made a commitment and a promise to our employees that they're going to have this income in their retirement, and we're committed to live up to that promise. But we've got to find a way to pay it, and I actually think we can. As you know, last year, City Council directed some parking tax revenue to the pension plan, and that was a good move, and all of that helps. We also, of course, need to address the cost side of the pension equation, and we can talk a little bit about that. But those long-term costs, they're a significant hurdle to that. But then you add to that the other big problems we have. As you know, you live here in the City of Pittsburgh. We've got some very significant infrastructure problems all over this city, whether they be roads, bridges, stair. You know, this is a hilly town. You know, we have a lot of city steps that connect our neighborhoods, and they're crumbling all over Pittsburgh. And then you've got the underground issues, the sewers, the sewer and water issues that are significantly expensive for Pittsburgh. So, you know, we've got, you know, like I said, if we only had the pension and long-term debt problem to worry about, you know, I think we'd be okay. But in addition to that, we've got this infrastructure deficit that we've got to worry about as well.
Well, speaking of budgets, could you comment on the mayor's budget for 2011?
Well, yeah, I mean, the mayor's budget, you know, the big issue with respect to the mayor's budget, you know, as much as there's a lot of fighting back and forth, the fact of the matter is 90% of the budget was agreed to by mayor and the mayor and council. You know, there weren't a lot of disagreements on, you know, because the budget and some, you know, if you understand that, you know, that you have to pay policemen and you have to pay firemen and you have to pay public works and public refuse employees, I mean, it pretty much dictates what your budget's going to be. Where the mayor and council got into a bit of a dispute was over this whole issue of funding pensions. And as you know, last year the mayor tried to privatize a lot of downtown garages and the neighborhood parking meters. Council didn't agree to go along with that, and so council decided to try to deal with the short-term pension issue in its own way, which was to direct future revenues to the pension fund. So they basically said, okay, for the next 30 years, we're going to take a portion of the parking tax and we're going to dedicate that to the pension fund. They basically conveyed it to the pension fund. So the pension fund actually now owns that future revenue. And it's about $750 million over the next 30 years that will go directly to the pension fund from parking revenues. And it'll happen every year. That really was a big dispute that the city council and the mayor had. And what the mayor's argument now is, now that, you know, we're in 2011 and council did a couple of things to make sure we had a balanced budget this year. But next year, because council directed $13 million of parking revenue to the pension fund, they basically have created a $13 million hole in the budget. And so there's going to be a lot of discussion and debate about how are we going to fill that $13 million. Council's suggestion to the mayor was that, well, you ought to raise parking rates, you know, to some degree, like you were going to through this lease program that you had, raise those rates on our own, and let's take that revenue and direct it back to the city budget. But, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not that's really a viable alternative. I mean, I actually do think the numbers could work if they raise it to the right rate. But, you know, that's still an issue that council and the mayor are going to have to hash out over the next 6 months before the end of 2011.
All right. Well, actually, interestingly, you were a little bit more optimistic, and now you're pointing out a lot of the long term problems. I didn't even think about $700 million pension costs in addition to the $600 million long term debt, and the bridges and the infrastructure and the sewers and everything else.
I think part of the problem is that, and probably the last time I talked to you, I'm trying to remember when that was, but it was probably, you know, in the early days of the national recession and the global recession. Pittsburgh was not feeling the pinch of the global recession, and even at the depth of the recession, Pittsburgh's kind of weathered through it pretty well. You know, our economy, because it is based so much more now on finance and education and medicine and, you know, healthcare, you know, it's not that big manufacturing economy that. So when the manufacturing economy really went south, places like Detroit really got hit. People, even Cleveland had a more significant problem than we had. You know, our economy weathered that storm pretty well. But even with that, you know, as I said, in 2010, it was not a particularly good year for Pittsburgh from a revenue standpoint. And that has to do with a lot of things, not just what's going on in Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh is to some degree dependent on the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and we know what happened with their budget. You know, they significantly slashed spending in their budget, and that has a somewhat of an effect on us. As the economy goes down and sales tax revenue goes down, that means that our portion of the RAD tax goes down. So we lose that part of revenue, and then, as I said, as people lose jobs, you know, our budget is so dependent on the people who live and work in the city of Pittsburgh. When jobs are lost, the city feels a real hit. I would tell you that at right now today, I am much more optimistic than I was, say, 6 months ago, because we have seen a significant turnaround. You know, it's an interesting thing. As bad as the situation got for the financial industry in this country, and you know how that was in 2009 and 2010, the city of Pittsburgh actually did very well. You know, we have several very stable and large finance-based organizations and employers here in the city, including PNC Bank, including Bank of New York Mellon, Federated Investors, and those organizations through that tough economy were adding jobs. And so Pittsburgh is realizing the benefit of that. You know, PNC just had a big announcement last week about their expanding in downtown, and you know, they now employ close to 10,000 people in the city of Pittsburgh. And so, you know, while some of those jobs have been lost to places like New York and even in Cleveland and Columbus, the city of Pittsburgh has added a significant number of jobs in the financial industry over the last year and a half. So, I was talking to somebody from BNY Mellon today, who tells me that they have as many employees at Mellon right now as they did before the merger. You know, they lost the big jobs because the headquarters moved up to New York, but a lot of the service-related jobs have come to Pittsburgh because the leadership at BNY Mellon recognized that Pittsburgh is a much more economic and friendly place to do business. So a lot of their back office type work is coming back to Pittsburgh, and those are good jobs. And to have them right down in the middle of the city is a great thing. And they also have about 300 jobs out in Armstrong County at a facility out there. So they've really added a lot of jobs to this economy. And like I said, what PNC has done and what some of these other financial industry players have done has been just a big plus for us. So I would still tell you that I'm optimistic, even though last year I want to tell you that we did have a tough year.
Well, I like the idea of jobs in the city and people paying earned income tax, but a lot of people work in the city and they don't pay an earned income tax. They pay basically an occupation tax.
Right.
Do you have, and I know, for example, if you live in Philadelphia, let's say you live outside of Philadelphia or you live outside of New York City and you work there, you have to pay an earned income tax. What do you think about having Pittsburgh tax some of the people, and I'm talking about more than $50 a year in occupation tax, and I know I'm going to get a lot of people in the suburbs mad,
yeah.
But what do you think about having some of the people who make their livelihood in Pittsburgh pay some taxes and more than $50 to Pittsburgh?
Well, obviously, I'm from Pittsburgh, and I'm a city taxpayer, and as a controller, oversee a lot of the city's financial operation. I think it would be great if we could have more people in the suburbs contribute more to our budget. But the fact of the matter is that all of that power, and I think I said this to you last time I was on the show, that the city of Pittsburgh exists because the state of Pennsylvania says it can. The power in this situation is at the state and with the state legislature. And when you've got a situation here in Allegheny County, where we've got a delegation of legislators who listen to their constituents and move in the direction their constituents want them, and the vast majority of them represent districts outside the city of Pittsburgh because of our population loss. That we're not going to get to a point where we can convince a majority of our own legislators here in Allegheny County that we should do something like that, let alone the rest of the legislators across the state. So, I think it's unrealistic to expect that we are going to get any kind of a commuter tax as an earned income tax. I think what's more likely, and something that's been discussed, is some kind of increase in the local services tax, the $52 tax, and whether that would go up. When that was originally proposed as part of the Act 47 plan, the idea was that the tax wasn't going to be a dollar a week. It was going to be $12 a month. It was going to be a $144 tax. And, if we had that $144 right now, we wouldn't have a number of the problems that we have. And, that would generate, close to $20 million in revenue and would have enabled the city to do much more with respect to its own infrastructure and getting its own financial house in order. Some of that money obviously would have been directed to the pension fund as well. So, there are, it's a very difficult terrain up in Harrisburg when you're dealing with these kind of issues because you're asking legislators to basically vote for a tax increase for their own constituents. But we've been fortunate to get what we've got, and hopefully we're going to be successful in convincing them that the 52 is a little low for the services that people avail themselves to every day. And it's one of the things that people don't understand. We are a city that has shrunk in population from a high of about 750,000 people down to now close to 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. And yet we still have basically the same number of jobs in the city of Pittsburgh that we had at the height of the steel industry, you know, and so we need to be able to provide police and fire and EMS protection to those commuters who come into town every day. And I can tell you that that costs a lot more than $52 a person.
That's a good point. Jim, before you get to your next question, we're going to take a quick break. We're here with Controller of the City of Pittsburgh, Michael Lamb, and Jim Lang. We'll be right back with more of the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Well, welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. We are here this evening with Jim Lang, CPA and attorney, and Michael Lamb, controller of the City of Pittsburgh.
Michael, you had mentioned that there are some competing interests even within Allegheny County. And I know one of the things that you have been very interested in throughout your career is, let's call it, intergovernmental cooperation within the county. And, you know, right now, I forget the number, but there's a ridiculous number of municipalities, many of whom have duplicated services. Could you tell us what is going on with your efforts in, let's say, consolidating some of these services? And I understand that you are very active in a entity called Connect.
Right.
And maybe if you could tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, well, as you know, we have been trying to deal with this issue of our fractional system of government. And, you know, we have 131 municipalities here in Allegheny County, and many of them have police departments, and they've got various levels of service, from whether it's fire or EMS. And so, you know, it's been a problem, even to the point where, you know, if somebody wants to come into the county and do some things, the fact that you have to deal with a bunch of different building codes and zoning ordinances and everything, it gets very cumbersome to try to do business here. And you know, one of the things that we tried to do here in Pittsburgh, when I first got elected, I met with some of the officials, some people out at GISPE, at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at Pitt, and we talked about the idea of trying to get those communities that border the city of Pittsburgh to get together and start talking about opportunities for savings, working together on shared service agreements and other opportunities. And out of those discussions, the organization became Connect, which is the Congress of Neighboring Communities. And it's Pittsburgh and those 35 communities that border the city of Pittsburgh. And all those we call them the also urban communities, because they're suburban communities, but they really are part of our urban core. And when you look at a place like, for instance, Mount Lebanon, you know, Mount Lebanon has a lot more in common with the city of Pittsburgh than it has in common with Upper St. Clair. You know, Ross Township has a lot more in common with Pittsburgh than it has in common with Marshall and, you know, those northern tier communities. This organization, these 35 communities, you know, represent about 80% of all jobs in Allegheny County. They represent, I think, 90% of all transit stops in Allegheny County, and they're all members of the Alcosan watershed. So they're, you know, we have so many issues in common, and so many issues that we really need to address, jointly, because it just doesn't make sense for us. You know, when you're talking about, you know, sewage systems and stormwater runoff and those issues, I mean, they really don't pay any attention to borders. And so what we've tried to do, and we also recognize that a lot of these communities are reluctant to give up their identity and their autonomy and who they are. And so what we've tried to do at Connect is recognize these communities exist, but let's try to make those borders less relevant when it comes to the provision of public services. And we've had great success. I mean, first off, just the fact that we are now together and talking for the first time is a great step forward. But we've actually seen some benefits, some financial success, in that we have, we've done a joint purchase of energy for the first time. And so, a number of those communities realized significant savings by joining with the city of Pittsburgh and purchasing bulk energy. We generated $20,000 in savings for Wilkinsburg. Now, $20,000 doesn't sound like a lot, but in a budget like Wilkinsburg, it's significant savings. And so, you know, we're doing those kind of things. We're working with our neighboring communities on things like LED lighting. Last year, we took over Millville's water system. And last year we, 2 years ago we moved in and started garbage collection in Wilkinsburg, and last year we began to do fire protection, earlier this year, providing fire protection services to Wilkinsburg, and all of these things have been at least revenue, or expense neutral to the city of Pittsburgh. But in most cases, they've actually generated small savings for Pittsburgh and significant savings to the joining partner. And so we've done a lot of those kind of things. And we're also working with Allegheny County on a number of fronts. We 2 years ago entered into an agreement to collect delinquent taxes jointly with Allegheny County, and that's gone pretty well. We're seeing new revenue come in through that arrangement. We're working right now with the county on a new financial management system, an ERP system for the city, where we will basically join an instance of the county's existing system. One of the big issues that we've had in Pittsburgh is that our financial management system is outdated. It's not supported by any vendor, and we have significant problems there. If we have a crash, we lose data. It hasn't happened to us yet. I mean, we have crashes, but nothing so catastrophic that we lost any data. But we're concerned, and so we found this solution. We were told that this was going to cost us, close to $15 million, and we found a solution that's probably going to cost us, something like $7 or $8 million. So, we are with our county and with our neighboring communities to help generate savings for all the parties involved.
And didn't you have some success with 911 calls also?
We did. 911 was merged. The city and county merged 911 about 7 years ago, and since then, most of the municipalities in Allegheny County have joined. There are still a couple that are operating their own. They're still doing their own 911 dispatch work. But I know we just picked up another community within the last 6 months that has joined the county 911 system. So for the most part, Allegheny County has, a uniform 911 system, and that has, not only generated savings, but that has really led to a much stronger service. So it's a better provider. Now, I've been very active in the issue of EMS, and we produced a report from my office last year called Critical Condition, looking at the funding crisis that we have in EMS, not just in the city of Pittsburgh, but in all of our neighboring communities. And just in that circle of those communities that touch Pittsburgh, there were 17 EMS providers. We actually just merged one earlier this year. The West Mifflin system merged with Baldwin this year, and so we have seen some of that kind of consolidation, and we're working to encourage more of that. But also, really the main focus of this report that we did was that we wanted to do two things. First, identify a funding source for the EMS to continue, but also raise the level of the service, because people who come to Pittsburgh, work in Pittsburgh, they don't all live in Pittsburgh, and even people who are in Pittsburgh travel outside of Pittsburgh, and you don't want to have a substandard service provider coming to the scene of your accident or whatever the need may be. So we're really working with our neighboring communities to up the level of service in a way that is funded by this new funding source, which we've identified, and hopefully are going to get the participation of our local hospitals and universities to help fund this sort of value-added effort to EMS. And we've had very good discussions. We haven't finalized any agreement yet, but we've had very good discussions with UPMC and Highmark and the University of Pittsburgh and West Penn Allegheny about this kind of an idea, and so far it looks like something that may happen. So that's a great plus for us.
Okay, and by the way, just for our listeners, in case somebody doesn't know that acronym, EMS is Emergency Medical Services, because I know you used it about 10 times, and by the way, I do the same thing. I go into different things that we assume, but not everybody does.
Well, one of the things that's important for people to understand about that, the paramedic service, the EMS service, the emergency medical service, really started out as a volunteer type kind of thing, in most of the communities outside of Pittsburgh, and just like the volunteer fire departments are. As time has gone on, the skill level required to be a paramedic and even an EMT have gotten so much higher. You know, right now, what the education and training you need to be a paramedic is basically the same training you need to be a nurse. And nurses make significantly more money than paramedics. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're attracting good qualified paramedics into this field, and that we have these people out, not just in Pittsburgh, but in all of our surrounding communities. And so this funding is to really help to aimed at helping that situation. Those salaries are going to have to go up in the next few years. And you know, with the way the healthcare, the new healthcare bill works, there's, you know, less reimbursement available, and so there's a real need, a real financial need there, and we're trying to address it in a creative way.
Well, speaking of, let's call it transparency and keeping an open book, I understand that you have been fairly active in something called Open Book Pittsburgh, which is a website that, as I understand it, your office launched to give residents information regarding city contracts. Could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, sure. When I, you know, when I ran for this office 4 years ago, you know, 4 years ago now, we talked a lot about this issue of transparency and, you know, shining some light on what goes on in City Hall and letting people really see what goes on, because, you know, there was a lot of talk about this pay to play, you know, people give political contributions and that's how they get contracts and all that kind of thing. So we wanted to shine as much light on that situation as we could. And so we created this website called Open Book Pittsburgh. It's www.openbookpittsburgh.com, and it's basically a database of every contractual relationship that the city has, and it's searchable by vendor, it's searchable by department, it's searchable by purpose. You can go on and see every contract. And then the other part of the website is the financial contributions to all the political office holders in Pittsburgh. So all the city council members, the mayor and myself, we take all of that information and we enter that into our database, all of their financial reports from their campaigns. So you can see, here's who's giving money to the various candidates, and here's who's getting contracts. And, you know, we don't really draw any conclusions on it. We just let the public see what it is, and they can draw their conclusions for themselves.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to the Lang Money Hour with Jim Lang and Michael Lamb.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Alrighty, welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. We are here with Jim Lang and Michael Lamb, controller for the City of Pittsburgh.
Michael, I have actually two questions from one of our listeners. Guy named Bob Gallagher, who I've known for years, and he has expressed a little frustration. He's saying, what is going on with the Civic Arena? And the town hall meeting that he went to said that if the Civic Arena is taken down and the development is put up, that that's going to mean thousands of jobs and roughly $25 million of revenue on an annual basis to the city. Can you tell us what is going on with that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's an interesting situation, and I feel his frustration because I agree with it. You know, there is a group of individuals out there who feel very strongly about the significance of the Civic Arena, the historic nature of it, the architectural value of it. I can tell you that I'm not one of the people in that camp. I actually, you know, I come from this issue from a different point of view, and you know, I grew up in a neighborhood in the South Hills in Beachview, where my church, when I was a kid, was just built in 1960, and the reason it was built was because it was built to replace a church that was torn down to make way for the Civic Arena. And so a lot of the people who from that community moved up to my neighborhood and became members of our parish, And so I grew up with a lot of people whose families basically were, you know, kicked out of the Lower Hill District to make room for the Civic Arena. And so when I look at that site and someone asks me about the historic nature of that site, I think of the old neighborhood that was there, not the Civic Arena itself. And, you know, I think this idea that that this building has some useful life beyond what it was does not sit well with me and doesn't hold water for me. So I have no problem in trying to take some portion of that site and having some kind of designation of that arena. I heard someone suggest leaving the big arch up and maybe even one of the pieces of the outer shell of the arena up, and then as some sort of public space, which I don't have a real problem with that, but
a little bit like the wall at Forbes Field.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have the wall at Forbes Field. You have one of the gates to Three River Stadium is still intact. One of the pillars of the gates that went up. You know, if they wanted to leave that superstructure that basically held up the roof of the arena, and maybe even one of the pieces of pie, so to speak, that came down the convex kind of triangle that comes down, and create either a public space or even a performance space or something like that there, that's one thing. But to hold up the development of that site, and that's really all we're doing right now, because the arrangement with that site is that the responsible party for developing that site are the Pittsburgh Penguins. And the Pittsburgh Penguins are not under any obligation to do anything on that site until the arena's down. Once the arena's down, the clock starts to tick. They've got 10 years where they've got to develop 1 acre of land every year for 10 years. That 10 years, it doesn't start until that arena's down. And that's the way the agreement stands. And so we are right now just delaying as your friend Mr. Gallagher said, we're delaying the job creation, we're delaying the economic development of that site. And let me say one more thing about that site. I mean, you're familiar with the downtown Pittsburgh and the Lower Hill District. The Hill District itself should be the most vibrant neighborhood in the state of Pennsylvania. It sits between downtown Pittsburgh and Oakland, which are the second and third largest economic generators in the Commonwealth. And here you have this neighborhood that has struggled for so long. And part of the reason that it has struggled is because it has been there have been barriers around that neighborhood, and one of those barriers was the Civic Arena. You think about downtown Pittsburgh and walking up to the Hill District, walking up to, say, St. Benedict's Church. Well, it's like a wasteland between downtown, having to cross over the Crosstown Expressway and then walk up beyond the Civic Arena, where if you had some development there and some sense of a neighborhood, whether it be commercial, residential, and hopefully this is going to be a good mixed-use community there, you would be more inclined to venture up into the Hill District and be involved in the Hill District. I mean, the Hill District is a phenomenal neighborhood. It's just a phenomenal place. You have the Crawford Roberts development that Mayor Masloff and Mayor Murphy completed, and that has spurred some great things going on up in the neighborhood. But because of that arena site, you're still just there's too big a barrier between downtown and that neighborhood. And so anything that we can do to reestablish the street grid there and make it a more inviting entree is something we really need to do.
Not to mention the $25 million.
Well, that's right. I mean, however that site gets developed, it's going to add value to us from a property tax perspective and add jobs. So, we really need that. I mean, you look at the announcement last week. PNC Bank is going to build a 40-story tower. It's going to keep 2,500 construction workers to work for 3 years. I mean, that's huge for Pittsburgh. And you think about a site as big as what's on the Civic Arena. I mean, the job creation is staggering. So we really need to make it happen.
Well, let me ask you another question. This also comes from Bob. This might be a little bit tougher for you, but Bob wants to know, and frankly, I do too. Are you going to run for mayor? See, I was giving you a lot of softballs up to now.
Yeah. I'm up for re-election this year. I run in the fall for second term at controller, and I'm going to get through that. And once I get through that, we'll decide what the future's going to hold. But it's 2 years is a long way away. You know, it's something that obviously, you know, I have run from. I run for mayor before. I ran it back in 2005. So it's always been something that was of interest to me. But it's really something that I won't even begin to make a decision about until at least after this election's over.
I didn't think that I'd get a yes or no answer for that. and that's certainly fair enough. Could you give us a little bit of a progress report on the Big Dig? And I'm specifically talking about the tunnel running from downtown to the North Shore.
Yeah, you know... But I tell you, it's just, it is really disheartening to me is what's happened with transit in Pittsburgh over the last couple of years. And I know a lot of people are upset about this tunnel. The fact of the matter is we need to extend that T, and whether we were going to extend that T with a bridge to the north side or a tunnel under the river, however it was going to be a lot of money. And the fact of the matter is this tunnel had significant federal funding in place for it. And so I know as much as people get upset with that whole situation, extending the T is a good thing. It's a good thing for Pittsburgh. And getting to the north side, you know, people think, well, it's just serving the stadiums and the casino, and it certainly is serving those. But you know, there's a growing development over in the North Shore, and the fact is that that is the first step to both a northern extension of the T and a western extension to the T. You know, people forget that the airport actually sits north of the city. You know, and it's west of the city, but it actually sits north of the point. And so, you know, that direction, you know, that's exactly the way that we're going to get to the airport, you know, with the T. Now, the fact that the airport is not the airport it was 10 years ago is a problem, and so maybe that's not the extension that we should be pursuing right now. But we need to extend that T. I mean, every great city has great transit, and right now, Pittsburgh doesn't have great transit. And, you know, when you see what's going on with bus routes, you know, getting canceled I just found out over the weekend that the U bus from the South Hills doesn't exist anymore. You know, that bus was filled every single day. The bus started out out in the South Hills, came down West Liberty Avenue and headed out the Boulevard of the Allies and dropped kids off at Pitt and CMU and Carlo and all the schools out there, not to mention all the hospital workers and everyone else that used that service. And now that service doesn't exist, and that's shocking to me, that you know that we're losing those kind of connections. You know, the key to transit is to be able to connect the people from where they live to where their jobs are. And while Port Authority has done a pretty good job of that over the last 30 years, it's starting to erode away, and we've got to find a way to connect people. Now, I think there is a preference for some people for fixed rail transit because it's safer. You always know where fixed rail is going, and so people are more inclined to ride it because they're not going to have the kind of problems where you get on a bus and you're not exactly sure where that bus is going to go. So you know the tunnel under the river is proceeding on schedule, and last I heard was slightly under budget. Or at least under the amended budget that they put through. So, you know, it's going to be up and running, sometime. I don't know if it's later this year or early next that it's going to be. I think it's early next year that it's going to be operational. I noticed that the station over by the Heinz Field is mm-hmm. constructed at this point. So, you know, I think it's I have a feeling that, you know, if we are able to continue to add to that light rail system by either a northern extension that could possibly go right out the Northern Parkway there, you know, the HOV lane or some extension like that, that people will see that tunnel as maybe not the big boondoggle that it's portrayed to be today.
I can't wait till that tunnel's ready. It'll be great to go over to the North Shore, so much easier. We do need to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more of the Lang Money Hour.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill. 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Alrighty, welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. And before we get to the last segment of our show, just want to remind you, we did come on the air tonight at 6 p.m., but every other Wednesday night we are on at 7 p.m. Matter of fact, just so I'll say this now in case at the end of the show we don't have time, but next time we're on the show, June 15th, two Wednesday nights from now, we're going to be having Roger Ibbotson on the show. We're very excited about that. And if you miss that, like I said, we're on every Sunday at 9 a.m. 9 a.m. Sunday mornings, KQV. And if you miss that, come on to retiresecure.com, and you can hear all the shows, all of our archives right there.
You don't want to miss Roger Ibbotson.
No, not at all.
He's literally one of the top financial guys in the country.
So exciting.
And Yale professor, phenomenal financial force.
Yes.
Michael, I have a question from Steve Komen. Steve is a CPA and a certified estate planning expert from our office. And he's our, in addition to preparing income tax returns, he is also involved with doing Roth IRA projections and gift projections. And he doesn't like the term running the numbers, but he is the guy who makes financial projections and helps us with long-term recommendations. But one of the things that he is not a huge fan of is some of the forms that he has to fill out for some of the city residents when he is preparing tax returns. So he will cite the ET1s and the LS1s and the ISPSs. And frankly, it takes us time and it increases the cost of income tax preparation. If people try to do this on their own, it's going to take their time, or it's even more confusing if you don't know those. He would consider these nuisance taxes. Do you have any opinions on the cost of compliance with all these forms? And he just says, hey, can't you just find revenue by increasing the income tax a little bit and make it simpler for everybody? Or do we still need all these little forms and I don't want to say tiny taxes, because sometimes they can, maybe over time, they can generate a lot of money. But can you comment about what he would consider, why is Pittsburgh so form crazy?
Well, I mean, you know, it's because we I don't know that we have a number of sources of tax revenue in the city of Pittsburgh, because it's the revenue that the legislature has granted to us. And so, you know, there is an effort to try to be as fair as possible. You know, the biggest tax source that we have is the property tax. You know, it generates, you know, almost $130 million. In what is a $440 million budget. So it is by and large the biggest tax that is paid. And, you know, for the people who are paying a mortgage, it's taken right out of their mortgage, and our mortgage company pays it, and so there's really no forms involved. But for the individual resident. But in Pittsburgh, as you know, we have an older population here, and a lot of people have their mortgages paid a long time ago, and they are, you know, required to pay their property taxes. Then you've got your earned income tax, which is the next biggest tax that we have, which is a wage tax. It's 3% if you live in the city. It's 1.5% to the city, 1.5% to the school district, and so there's that tax, and that requires, you know, the filing of a PG-40, just like the 1040 or the state income tax form. So there's that form. And then the next taxes that we get, you know, there's the next, really the big tax we get is the next biggest tax is the parking tax, which there's really no forms for individuals to pay. And then the business tax, the payroll preparation tax. And while you as a small business pay it, your clients probably don't, unless they are, have some kind of sole proprietorship or something like that. And so, you know, once you get past that, I mean, the local services tax, most people don't have to file a form on that LS form, but, you know, so a lot of times there's an issue whether if you are a part-year resident or if you paid a tax somewhere else, you don't have to pay it, or if you didn't meet the income threshold, you know, you get a refund back and those kind of things. So that does generate forms. There's no question about it. But each of those individual tax tax categories is critically important to Pittsburgh and to its to how we operate. And so, I wouldn't call them nuisance taxes. I mean, I think everyone thinks every tax is a nuisance to some degree. But these are taxes that the legislature have enacted for Pittsburgh, and they're the taxes we're allowed to collect. And as you know, they've made significant limits on what we can collect. You know, we used to have a 50% parking tax, and the legislature came in and said, no, that has to be. It has to be brought down to 37, so we lost that revenue. We used to have, I think, which was a much more difficult tax for small business, the business privilege tax, which was a tax on gross profits, and the mercantile tax, the same thing. We don't have those taxes anymore. We have the payroll prep tax instead. So as much as I think he's probably, there's an argument that he's making that there are a number of forms and the city's not the best at dealing with how to collect those taxes, it's actually a much better situation today than it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, when we still had those more onerous kind of taxes on business. But the one thing we're trying to do, we've looked at trying to put together a package for small business owners.
About 1 minute, by the way.
Okay, and that small business package would include things like, you know, filing dates and making filing easier and doing filing online, as well as something that you and I have talked about in the past, the ability to file for an extension. On the income tax,
we don't have time for that one.
Those are the kind of things we're working on.
But actually, we are going to have to sign off now. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. We will be back in 2 Wednesdays at 7 p.m. with Roger Ibbotson, the father of asset allocation. We're so excited for that show. You've been listening to the Lang Money Hour. Have a great evening. Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Check out the show archives and listen on demand anytime at retiresecure.com. KQV listeners can receive free tickets to Jim Lang's Pittsburgh area workshops and more. Call the Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732. That's 412-521-2732. And reserve your seats and meet Jim Lang in person. Again, that's 412-521-2732. The Lang Money Hour's executive producer is Nicole DiMartino with the Lang Financial Group on KQV 1410 Pittsburgh.